Tonight, this is America, gripped by gunfire.
The person here died.
Correct.
A police sergeant unable to save his own sister from domestic violence.
This is my job, to protect people. It's a personal failure to me. I wasn't able to do that for her.
Inside the invisible epidemic.
Domestic violence is a very real thing. It's like the ugly secret in everybody's family that people don't want to talk about.
And the calls for change. This special edition of Nightline, One Nation Under Fire. Good evening. Thank you for joining us. I'm Pierre Thomas. Tonight, the epidemic within the pandemic, gun violence in America. ABC News teamed up with the Gun Violence Archive and our affiliates and owned stations across the country to track gun violence every day over the last week. And here at Nightline, we look at the deadly intersection where firearms and domestic violence meet in One Nation Under Fire.
This was my wedding. My sister there in the corner.
For Greg Skaggs, these are the special times with his sister, Talina Huffman, that will stay imprinted in his memory.
That's a picture of her with my niece when she was a baby. She had a huge heart, and I've said it over and over that she had more love to give than anybody else that I know. She just never found the right person to love her the same way.
Last week, Talina was murdered, shot dead by her husband, Eric. Not long after, Eric turned the gun on himself.
The biggest thing I want people to realize is that, you know, domestic violence is a very real thing. It's not the forefront of the news unless something really traumatic happens. But it's like the ugly secret in everybody's family that people don't want to talk about.
More than half of the women killed by gun violence are killed by family members or intimate partners. Talina's death was one of at least 67 gun incidents related to domestic violence that occurred last week, according to the Gun Violence Archive, a website that tracks gun incidents in the United States.
We're seeing they will shoot themselves, they will shoot their kids. Fortunately, we've been seeing several more where we see murder-suicides occur, and the kids are in the house.
Across the country, gun violence on the whole has surged in recent months. For one full week, in partnership with the Gun Violence Archive and our own owned stations and affiliates, ABC News examined the numbers. More than 1,100 incidents, more than 400 dead, roughly 900 wounded.
We're seeing numbers that up until last year we had literally not seen since the early 90s.
3-2, swing and a miss.
We saw it begin Saturday, July 17th, as we started our investigation. Gunshots outside of Nationals Park. But far and away from the cameras, a quiet tragedy unfolded in Utah.
We had two friends, a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old, who had agreed to meet up and sneak out. One of them had brought a firearm.
Lance Moorhead, just 13, accidentally shot dead by his 15-year-old friend. Later that night, a mother and her baby caught in the crossfire at a corner store in West Philadelphia, wounding a one-year-old.
I'm tired of this. I'm sick and tired of this.
Day after day, we saw so many children affected by this violence. One boy shot in a bedroom.
And the bullet just went through the wall, went through his head.
Tristan Jaden Rosas in San Antonio, Texas, was only 15 and playing video games, hit by a stray bullet.
I should have been there, because when you promise a kid that you're going to protect them, that's a promise you can never take back.
Altogether, an unspeakable toll. More than 39 dead, 94 wounded under age 18, and of the deceased, 6 children under 12. The violence stretched from rural areas to urban cities.
It's been a minute since I've done this.
In Philadelphia, we roll along with the police. A small number of streets infected with gun violence.
We see this corner store right here. I want to come up in person. Okay. There were 6 people shot. So this is another corner here where we have multiple shootings.
That night, the streets were quiet until they weren't.
And now there's reports of shots fired at another end of the city.
A shooting outside this restaurant, famous for its cheesesteaks.
That's a shell casing right on the ground right there. See where the white circle's drawn around it. I don't know what it is. You get closer to 2 o'clock, stuff starts popping.
As we waited at the scene, the horrible news.
So he was pronounced deceased.
The person here?
Correct.
Died?
Correct.
That's horrible.
Philadelphia's police commissioner, Danielle Outlaw, told us the argument was over a parking space.
A lot of the beefs or social media disputes or whatever, they're being resolved with the firearm.
And sadly, we followed as reports of suspected domestic violence ticked up, among them to Lena Huffman.
That's a picture of her and Eric.
She and her husband, Eric, had been together for 20 years.
What were your first impressions of Eric, and when did something strike you as making you uncomfortable?
Eric was a really nice guy from the start. Very helpful, came around a lot. I guess never really worked a job or anything for the most part. So that was something always that kind of struck me a little odd.
Did there come a time that you sensed that the relationship was becoming abusive?
No, not for a long time. We always knew he was kind of psychologically controlling of her. Mm-hmm. He really had to be around for all conversations, any phone calls. For a long time, we just kind of suspected the mental controlling, but not physical abuse.
Greg, who works as a police sergeant in Muncie, Indiana, says he and his sister weren't always in close touch. He says both she and her husband, Eric, struggled with an addiction to methamphetamines.
Did your sister ever express any direct concern about her life to you?
No, and I think a lot of it was mostly due to my profession. If she reached out for advice, I would give her advice, but it was never anything to do with domestic violence. It was usually other legal issues that she was having or he was having.
On July 19th, in Gas City, Indiana, just 6 days after Talena turned 43, she and Eric were passengers in a vehicle being driven by Eric's father.
He had basically stolen one of his father's guns and snuck it into the vehicle. They were arguing in the vehicle, and during the argument, she was sitting in the rear seat, and he turned around and shot her at that point.
Eric's father starts fighting Eric for control of the gun, crashing his car into parked semi-trailers in the process.
Eric regained control of the firearm at that point and turned it on himself, committing suicide.
I sense from you a little regret in the sense that you wish you had known more. Am I reading it right?
Very much so. One of the comments I had made to my wife was like, this is my job to protect people. This is my job to save somebody from this. And this is my sister. This is family to me. And I it's a personal failure to me. I wasn't able to do that for her. And that's something that's a burden I have to carry now.
According to the National Domestic Violence Hotline, the presence of a gun in domestic violence situations increases the risk of homicide for women by 500%.
Why is it important for you to tell the story to help America understand how often, A, domestic violence is happening, but also when you put a gun in the mix, it just makes for a lethal situation?
I mean, I will upfront say that with him sneaking a gun into the vehicle, he had every intention of killing my sister that day. For me, had it not been a gun, he probably would have taken a knife. He had every intention of killing her that day.
In the week we tracked, the shootings related to domestic violence were horrifying. In Minnesota, 32-year-old Amanda Schroeder was found dead by police in an apparent murder-suicide. Soon after, she called 911 to report her partner had been drinking and throwing things around the residence, and that she was unable to leave. In Indiana, late at night, 29-year-old Joseph Banks was killed by his boyfriend, 23-year-old Trevor Danefeld. Trevor then turned the gun on himself. And in Kansas, a domestic dispute resulted in a woman and her child being kidnapped.
While they were fleeing, he shot at the vehicle. He hit one of them, which was the child.
These instances are just a snapshot of the violence. Mark Bryant, who runs the Gun Violence Archive, says there are so many other shootings that involve domestic violence that we don't even know about.
If there's someone shot, the most important takeaway for that shooting is that they were shot. So the police are going to bring out that they were shot. They're not necessarily going to go drill down on individual shootings, that it was domestic violence. And that's the important part to the report.
Too often, domestic violence cases go unreported.
Unfortunately, I don't think there's enough resources out there for the victims of domestic violence where they can really feel like they can be safe and get away. Just because a lot of times there's financial stability, there's stability for children involved, or how are they going to be able to support themselves and their families at that point if they're alone?
If you had some advice for people today in terms of warning signs and what to do, what would you tell people to do?
Definitely reach out to them. Let them know that they have support, whether it's friends, family, the community. There are other programs that are out there. We have battered women's shelters and things like that in place for them and their family to be able to go to. Help walk them through the legal aspect of it, because it can be a little overwhelming.
As Greg lays his sister to rest, we might ask ourselves, when is enough enough? So many wounded, so many lives lost.
The best thing I can do for my sister at this point is to take such a negative tragedy that's happened and try to make something positive out of it. And my hope is to bring more attention to domestic violence in the nation. And even if I never know about it and it saves one life, it's made it worth it to me.
Coming up, how to stop domestic violence in its tracks here at home.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
The CDC reports more than 10 million adults experience domestic violence every year. To break down what we can do together to help stop this vicious cycle, earlier this evening I spoke with Rachel Graber, the Director of Public Policy at the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, and Stacey Ashby, a domestic violence survivor. Rachel and Stacey, thank you both for joining us. Rachel, I want to start with you. I don't think people have any idea just how pervasive domestic violence is in this country. Can you give folks at home a sense of what we're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for that question. About one in four women and one in seven men in the United States experience intimate partner violence in their lives. Every person who is watching this tonight knows someone who has experienced intimate partner violence, whether they know it or not.
I saw one stunning statistic that 1 million women have either been shot at or shot in this country. I just find that extraordinary.
And actually, there's a new research study out that found that 13.6% of American women have been threatened by a domestic abuser with a gun. And of those, 43% have been injured in some way, whether it's being shot or pistol whipped or sexually assaulted with a firearm.
That's just horrible. Stacey, I was thinking about your story, and I was thinking about how fortunate you are to be alive. Tell us that day when you were shot. What happened?
That day is still fresh in my mind. February 23rd of 2019, I went to Virginia Beach with then my fiance, and he was an alcoholic and started to drink and became very aggressive. I asked him to leave the hotel room. He did. He then wanted his jewelry back from me, which was another way of him trying to control my mind, by taking things away from me that he gave to me. So I decided to go ahead and give him his jewelry and meet him in the hallway, which later going to that hallway would be almost fatal. He got off the elevator and he pushed me to the ground and he shot me 3 times in my abdomen.
Oh my God.
The Lord placed some angels in that hotel because it was a police convention, and aid was given to me right away. So I'm just thankful.
It's a blessing that you survived. Were there different points where you could see it escalating toward that?
Definitely, the behavior, it gets worse. It starts out with maybe playing mind games, then the jealousy, the accusations of cheating, and then possession. And I honestly felt like he was going to do something to harm me, but did not think that he was going to try to take my life.
I've known of women who have dealt with abusive men, and the control aspect, it just intensifies and intensifies. Am I right?
That is correct. He pretty much wanted to isolate me and take me away from my friends and family so that he could pretty much have me to himself and do what he wanted to do, and I would have no outlet.
Rachel, what more should we be doing to provide support to women who are facing this challenge, and men, quite frankly, as well?
One of the most important things that we can do is make sure that survivors have somewhere safe to go, that we fund our domestic violence programs. And last week, we actually passed a bill through the Senate, and it was signed by the president, that provides an extra $2 billion annually of non-taxpayer money for victim services. As Stacey was saying, one of the things that abusers often do, they isolate survivors and they tell survivors, nobody cares about you. I'm the only person who cares about you. And last week, Congress and the president, they made it very, very clear that they do care about survivors. There are many different types of interventions that we can take, legal interventions, to prevent homicide. And one of those, honestly, is keeping the guns out of the hands of adjudicated domestic abusers. And so we have been working for several years. I think this is our third iteration now to reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act. And it includes a number of provisions addressing adjudicated abusers' access to firearms.
So Stacey, what's your message for women out there facing these challenges and men? What is your message to them?
What I would say is you're not alone. Please tell someone. If you feel like you have nowhere to go, call the police and ask them. I would also say to women, if you're in a relationship and the first time someone becomes aggressive with you, please leave, because it only gets worse. It never gets better.
That's very sound advice. I want to thank you both for taking the time tonight. We wish you well, and we hope that we shed some light on this tonight. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you.
Finally tonight, if you are or if you know someone who might be struggling, the National Domestic Violence Hotline is always open. Dial 1-800-799-7233 for free confidential assistance. There's help out there, but clearly we have a lot of work to do. Based on our tabulations last week, someone was shot every 10 minutes in this country. There's shootings happening right now. That's it for Nightline. We'll see you the same time next week. Thank you for watching. I'm Pierre Thomas. Have a great weekend. Good night.